Verse again. Yatamahanti bhutani bhuteshu cha vacheshvanu pravishtanya pravishtani tatha teshu nateshvam. As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside them all, I exist within all material creations and yet am not within them. So this is these verses that you're reading at the moment, as I'm sure all of you know, these are the Chatushloki verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is, one sense you could say, even more condensed nectar. This Bhagavatam is the creme de la creme, so this is the cream of the cream of the cream. And this is very wonderful verses. And there's many commentaries, and Srila Prabhupada writes extensive purports about these verses in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting them here in the first chapter, and he also quotes them in the Madhya Lila, 25th chapter, or he speaks about them and explains them even more in depth. So, very important verses. These seed verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam were spoken to Lord Brahma by Krishna. And this was after the performance of severe austerities or tapasya. Kaviraj Goswami is presenting them here in this chapter, very interestingly, the chapter entitled Spiritual Masters. And he's using these seed verses to explain the mood of a disciple and how one is meant to understand and approach the spiritual master. So we can see that although we may read some verses in a certain context, actually the acharyas are very expert, as they can unpack these verses so deeply that you can dive right in and swim around for lifetimes just exploring the nectar that exists within these verses. Specifically, Srila Jiva Goswami, he unpacks these verses even more, and we'll discuss that a little bit today. But first, how these verses were spoken and why. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is mentioning them here in the chapter, The Spiritual Masters, right at the very beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Thus giving the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam right at the beginning of this of the CC of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Now, who is Lord Brahma? Lord Brahma is the first spiritual master of this universe. So he is the original creator and guru of this universe. Yet he also has a guru. And his guru is Krishna. And Lord Brahma found himself sitting on the lotus flower, and he was not really sure what to do with himself. You can imagine, find yourself in the midst of space, unlimited space, sitting on a lotus flower. You've got four heads. We think we're very intelligent with just one little brain, but Lord Brahma is there with so many brains, and he's thinking, now what to do? Actually, it's explained in the Bhagavatam that he's thinking, well, now I have to create, but I don't really understand what is the direction that I'm meant to create, and what is the process. So we can understand that even in our own lives, many times people live very directionless. They don't have any point or purpose to life, simply following the status quo or following what everyone else is doing, because there doesn't seem to be any other way. And when we find some point or purpose or ultimate goal to our lives, then immediately we derive great satisfaction and bliss. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ji Ki Jai Shri Shri Gorni Tai Ki Jai. so fortunate to be worshiping such beautiful deities and such extremely high standard of deity worship. So Lord Brahma, he didn't know what the point was. He was idle and he had so much energy. Srila Prabhupada used to often say that his disciples needed to engage their fertile brains in Krishna's service, because we all have so much energy, so much tendency to think, what should I do? How should I do it? Anyone here ever get confused? What should I do? Should I do this? How should I do it? What time should I do it? And then we get all bewildered. Anyone finds themselves in those kind of predicaments? I think generally it's called the mental platform. We don't know who, how, why, or when, or where, or anything like that. And we get really bewildered. So this is even when we have some direction or some understanding of the purpose or process. What to speak of people who are aimless? Sometimes they can seem very focused, because often the aim or the focus is sense gratification and or more specifically, money. Because if you can work really hard and get a lot of money, then ultimately that's a goal, that's a purpose, and you achieve some success. But Lord Brahma, he was sitting there thinking, so what do I do now? And as he was contemplating and basically within, deeply meditating, you know, what do I do? What is the goal? What is the purpose? What is the process now? Then he heard the voice. And this voice quoted two syllables combined together, the syllables ta and pa, meaning tapa or tapasya. So Lord Brahma immediately thought, where did that voice come from? Let me find this voice. And he began looking all around, trying to seek out the source of this voice. But after much endeavor, he was unable to actually locate the originator of this sound vibration, tapa. So he decided, okay, then I will follow the instruction and I will perform penance or austerity and sit here in deep meditation for how many years? Hmm? 311 trillion years. I think that's his whole lifetime, isn't it? 4 billion is a day. Oh yeah, one day. Anyway, it says in Bhagavatam 1,000 years, something like that. So so he performed, he sat in, and of course his years are many. Of course he only lives for 100 years, but we have to, actually the Bhagavatam is here. But so he performed this tapasya and for so many years, and then the Lord became pleased with him. So we can also understand by this performance of tapasya or penance, then the Lord becomes exceptionally pleased, and he was very eager to reward Lord Brahma. So he offered him a benediction. In fact, he offered him any benediction. Yeah. Lord Brahma underwent penances for 1,000 years by the calculations of the demigods. So like that, so 1,000 years of the demigods. And then the Lord was pleased with him. And he was so pleased with his austerity and penance that he manifested Vaikuntha Loka before him and all around him. And then the Lord manifested personally before him, face to face. At this point, Lord Brahma was overwhelmed, and it's explained that actually his eyes became filled with tears and he began to shed these tears, recognizing the true ultimate fruit of his austerity that the Lord had manifested before him. And then the Lord also took his hand, shook his hand and offered him blessings. And said, now because I am so pleased you perform this austerity and this penance, please ask for me anything that you would like. And at that point, Lord Brahma, he asked four questions. And these four questions became the inspiration for the four seed verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So those four questions are given in the second canto, ninth chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. But in short, the first question was, what are your forms, your varied forms, in both matter and in transcendence? The second question was, how exactly do all of your different energies work? This would have been the verse that was covered in the last class. The third question, how do you play with your energies? How do you enjoy or manifest your energies in such a way that you're enjoying? And the final question, how do I, Lord Brahma, perform my duty of creating the entire universe and remain free from pride? In fact, it's explained that Lord Brahma, his whole point of asking or inquiring these questions was simply for this end. That he understood that he had had the special darshan of the Supreme Lord, and that now he was being specifically empowered to be the original creator of the entire universe. All of the Vedic wisdom had been imparted to him, and now he was very conscientious that actually I could become very, very proud at this point. That by taking on this universal management, that I could actually become very puffed up and forget about you and fall from my position and not be able to return to the spiritual world. So his inquiries were simply for this point, to actually understand how can I remain free from pride. So in the other classes, I'm sure each of these questions were explained or answered. But this text today, which is 155 of the Adi Lila, and is also the same as the second canto, 9th chapter, text 35, the third of the four seed verses of Bhagavatam, or Chatushloki. And it's also commented on by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in the 25th chapter of Madhya Lila, 124 through 127. Now, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is citing these verses here. And elsewhere, Srila Jiva Goswami gives amazing commentary by the mercy of Burijan Prabhu in his book, Unveiling the Lotus Feet, or His Lotus Feet. Then he explains in many places Srila Jiva Goswami's commentaries, as well as Sridhar Swami's commentaries, different commentaries like that, which lends a lot of insight. There he explains that Jiva Goswami, he divides these four verses into Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And he also, the first two verses are Sambandhagyan, and the third verse, which we're speaking on today, is Prayojana. And then the fourth of the Chatushloki is Abhideya. And the reason is that we can understand Sambandha is developing the relationship. Abhideya is the process, and Prayojana is the perfection. So the perfection is explained in this verse, and but it's very hidden, and that we'll also discuss a little bit. So specifically, this Prayojana is discussed in this verse, the perfection, and then after that, the question, how do I perform my duty and remain free from pride? This Lord Brahma is requesting, what is the process of how I attain this perfection? Does that make sense? So, Srila Jiva Goswami, he also divides these into another four categories, where he explains the first question, the first seed verse is Gyan. The second seed verse is Vigyan. The third seed verse is Prema, Bhakti. And the last verse is Sadhana Bhakti. these verses are explained also in text, I think it's 251 and the Adi Lila. They're explained sort of like a table of contents. And the verse is Gyanam Paramaguyam Me Yad Vigyana Samamvitam Sarahasyam Tad Angam Cha Grahana Grahana Gaditam Maya. Please hear attentively what I shall speak to you, for transcendental knowledge about me is not only scientific, but also full of mystery. So you heard these four words, Gyanam, Vigyanam, and then you heard Rahasyam. Rahasyam means? Sa eva yam maya tejya yoga pokta paratanaha bhaktosi me sakacheti rahasyam sad etad uttamam. So this rahasyam is the transcendental mystery or secret. It's very confidential. So Krishna keeps his pastimes in one sense very confidential, but it's explained that throughout the Bhagavatam he's giving glimpses into the topmost lila of the 10th canto and his loving relationship and interaction with the gopis. So in this verse, actually when Srila Jiva Goswami unpacks this verse, it becomes extremely high rasa tattva. Like, and you think, when I first read the purport from Adi Lila 155, I thought it was very scientific, with the material elements and the subtle elements and everything. But then when you read Jiva Goswami's commentary, you see how he just opens the whole thing right up. And when he's reading it, he's not thinking material elements. He's understanding the divine loving relationship, the topmost relationship between Krishna and the gopis, which Srila Prabhupada begins to allude to in his purport when he says that, I read the sentence twice. His existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness, and who therefore or thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization by which one can ultimately meet the Supreme Lord in person. That verse, yaya tamma prapanyante tamstatayava bhajami aham mamavartmanuvartate manashaparta sarvashaha, that as all surrender unto me, I reward them accordingly. So according to our surrender, the Lord is reciprocating with us. So this term rahasyam can be understood in the verse in the Bhagavad Gita, explains it can be understood by one who is a friend, a sakha, and a devotee, a bhakta, bhaktosi me sakha cheti, that it can be understood by someone who has a relationship with Krishna. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada constantly repeats over and over again that this confidential message cannot be understood by someone who is an impersonalist, by someone who is a mental speculator. And Jiva Goswami quotes so many verses from the 10th and 11th canto from the Uddhava Gita, explaining that, you know, one could go on speculating for lifetimes and lifetimes, but he will never actually come to the conclusion on his own of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Only if he develops love, only if he develops a relationship, only if he begins to accept the personal form of the Lord, can he actually enter into understanding this topmost loving relationship. So this verse is hinting at prema bhakti, which Jiva Goswami is explaining as prayojana, and in the indirectly describing rahasyam or the Srimad Bhagavatam's great secret. In the Bhagavatam 11.21.35, it says that the Vedas reveal truth in esoteric terms and indirectly, and he is pleased by this method. So the Bhagavatam is explaining in esoteric and very indirect ways. And it explains that the Lord is pleased by things being approached in this way. Why do you think that is? You could say the Bhagavatam could be condensed. Why so many verses? Why so many volumes? Especially for book distributors, then we wouldn't have to give out whole. We could just give out one, you know, one chapter, right? Could all just, all the nectar could just be right there. You know, or Prabhupada at the beginning of the Bhagavatam says, if you actually want to understand the 10th canto, then you can't skip to the 10th canto. You have to go through the process of reading the whole 9 cantos. Do you think that's because he wanted to translate 9 cantos so he could sell more books? No. What is the reason? Why is it that we have to go through the process? Exactly, for purification. Because we may think we're ready, but guess what? Probably we're not. And if we think we are, then almost definitely we're not. So even those who are qualified and are ready, they approach with great caution. Because you don't approach something that's very, very confidential in a rash manner. You don't just rush into it, right? You handle it with great care. You know, you don't take it out and just play with it all the time. When you approach it, it has to be in such a deep mood of humility and tolerance and surrender and respect. So this is why the Lord is pleased when one goes through the process. When one takes to the process of purification. When one becomes surrendered to the process. Because no one wants to surrender to the process. Everyone just wants to jump over and go straight into the nectar. Okay, I can do it for a little while. But then after a little while, I'm ready to go. Right? Why is that? Because we're influenced by the modes of passion and ignorance. But we have to become purified of those modes and come to the platform of the mode of goodness, cultivating goodness, and then we can transcend the modes. Then we can actually come to a platform where we're able to hear things in a proper way. When Srila Jiva Goswami reads the Bhagavatam, you know, he may not necessarily be hearing, seeing, understanding in the way that we are. I remember the first time I read through the Bhagavatam, the second and third cantos, I was like, oh God, when are they going to finish all this universal creation stuff? It's again and again, you know? Let me just get to some pastime, you know? It's like not understanding. And then reading through it again, you start to understand, oh, there's some real nectar boiling up here that I just didn't get the first time. And then, with the help of His Grace Burijan Prabhu and other devotees hearing, you know, you begin to see that there are so many doors and windows into these verses, and so many things can open up. But it's not going to open up the first time. You read it. What was there for you? Boredom. Nothing. No taste. Only, at least for me, I'm speaking for myself, Prabhupada said. Just read it. Okay, I'm just reading. You know, fighting to stay awake, right? While you're reading. Same in class, fighting to stay awake when we hear. But after some time, we come to a point where we're hearing and there's some taste. And someone unpacks and opens it up. And then, whoo, then we want to hear. Then we not only have to feel like we have to read, but we want to read. We want to dig in. We want to dive in. We just want hours to be set aside where we can just study and go deeper and deeper. Not just skim through quickly and get to the next one, next, just to say, I did it. I got to the end. So what's happening here is Jiva Goswami is unpacking this and is being done in a manner in which we can see, we can look deeper. Right, by the help of the acharyas. So Jiva Goswami in his Bhagavad Sandarbha, he explains that this verse is the epitome of prema bhakti. And he says, without pure love, maya cannot be given up. So we're not going to let go of maya until we have something more powerful, until we actually are developing love for Krishna. Then we'll be happy to let go of maya, like the disciple and spiritual master. The disciple was explaining, you know, maya has got a hold of me. Right? Anyone feel like that? Maya's just got me and covered me over and there's not much I can do. Maya's just so too powerful for me and she's got me. But the guru said, no, no, no. Maya doesn't have you. You are holding on to Maya. And he didn't quite understand. And then they were walking and he went over and he grabbed hold of one tree and he started going, let go of me, let go of me. And the disciple began to understand that actually, yes, I'm holding on. I'm the one who's not willing to let go. Isn't it? We let go a little bit. We're like, well, okay. Just a little. I'll give a little bit. I'll see how it works. Test it out, you know. If I get, you know, if it works for me, then I'll stay. I'll do a little more. If not, then I'm going back. Right? Many times we keep a little bit on the side, you know, just so we know that we're safe. In case it doesn't work out, this whole idea of surrender, then I've got a few, you know, there's a few numbers there. I can make the calls anytime, get right back into it. The material energy will always welcome you with open arms, right? Oh, come back, rub your head, sit you on the lap, like that. And then, and you think, oh, why did I do it? Why did I come back? Let me bog tiag, right? Renounce and joy, renounce and joy. So the Maya, material energy, it can't be fully given up until we actually develop something more powerful, something stronger. Param drishtra navartate, right? Until we get that taste of something that's so, so very precious, so valuable. It's the most wonderful thing that I've ever experienced, and I don't want to do anything at all to let that go, to give that up. And then whatever influence comes, we just want to protect that. No, I can't do anything. I can't step outside this. I have to protect this. I want to remain with Krishna. I want to remain with Krishna's devotees. Because we experience something, isn't it? We experience something that touches us deeper than anything has ever touched us before. And this is just a little flicker. This is just a shadow. Right? A shadow of pure love. This isn't even the real deal. What was it in one kirtan? Devotees were having ecstatic kirtan, and afterwards they went to Prabhupada and they said, Prabhupada, that was ecstatic. Prabhupada said, you do not know what ecstasy is. What was the other time when they came and said, Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada was trying to explain what is, you know, prema bhakti, and devotees, these people there are saying, is it like, you know, taking LSD? And Prabhupada said, if you've experienced some contact with God through LSD, then Krishna consciousness is like an ocean of LSD. Of course, it's not. Don't try that at home. But the analogy is there. So Prabhupada was explaining that what we're getting, especially in the beginning, is just something very small. It's like a shadow, like a glimmer, like even a reflection. It's not even the real deal. So just think, as we continue to cultivate this relationship, how much depth of emotion and experience is going to be available for all of us in our loving reciprocal relationship with Krishna. So we have to continue. And this verse from the Brahma Samhita, I don't know the whole verse, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena. This verse that one can see Krishna when his eyes are anointed with the salve of love. So when one actually has this, you know, this love for Krishna, then the world becomes a different place. We see things completely differently. You know, it used to be like we're coming out of the marathon. You see so many people enjoying out on the street. Everyone's gearing up for a good time. Christmas, New Year. It's the party season. You know, it used to be we'd get really inspired or enthusiastic by that passionate mode. It was like, yeah, 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 yeah. And now you can actually see, actually these people are basically, it's suffering. And you can remember in your own life how it was so much difficulty trying to enjoy like that. So our vision completely transforms by Krishna consciousness. We see the world differently when we develop some taste, some relationship with Krishna. So, the way that Jiva Goswami explains is that in the same way that the material elements are existing within and without everything, but specifically the living entity, then the Supreme Lord, He is also existing within and without, as explained in the verse and purport, as the super soul, and He's also the super soul that's all pervasive, because the super soul enters into every atom of matter. But at the same time, the source of the super soul is Krishna, who is actually not personally present there within every atom, in the form of Paramatma, super soul, but Himself personally, He has an expansion. Meanwhile, He's off in Goloka Vrindavan performing His pastimes. So, this distinction between present and not present is given. And then Jiva Goswami, he explains that this is epitomized by the loving relationship that the gopis have with Krishna. Because when Krishna is there manifest in His pastimes with the gopis, then He's personally present. But when He departs and leaves the gopis and goes elsewhere, then Jiva Goswami explains that the gopis, they become at first very morose and very sad because the Lord is no longer present. But as soon as they begin to remember the Lord and His pastimes and they begin to converse about Him, then immediately they go into ecstasy, because they're no longer separated from Him. So this mood of separation, Vipralamba and Sambhog, this separation and connectedness with the Lord are the same. It's not different. The Lord is simultaneously within and not within. He's simultaneously present and, you know, away. But if we can, our consciousness is such that we can actually remember Krishna in all circumstances, whatever the situation that we're in, then we're never separated from Krishna. Because a fearful or depressive or materially upsetting state or situation only occurs when we're forgetting Krishna. But as soon as we remember Krishna and begin to look for His hand, then as it's explained here, we can actually see Krishna face to face. When Srila Prabhupada first arrived in London, he explained that, you know, I've come to give you what you have forgotten. And then he said, some of you say that God is dead. Some of you say that He is an old man. Some of you say like this. Some of you say like that. But he said, but I'm here to tell you that you can see God face to face. Just as you are seeing me now, you can also see God face to face. When we hear that, we think, well, okay, yeah, right. Prabhupada can see God face to face, but how can we see God face to face? Well, Srila Prabhupada gives the key in this purport. He says that there is specifically one quality or qualification that we need to develop in order to see God face to face. And that quality or qualification is? Submissiveness. And the first step in that submissiveness is to accept what Srila Prabhupada is saying is the truth. And that it's a fact. And there's no doubt about it. Because Prabhupada is seeing Krishna face to face. Where was it in Australia or somewhere in an interview? Prabhupada was explaining that Krishna dictated these books. He said, Krishna Himself, personally, He dictated these books. And the reporter was saying, I don't understand. And then I forget who it was. Who was it that explained? It was Brahmananda or someone like that. It was explaining, no, what he means to say is that Krishna, as the Paramatma or Super Soul within the heart, he's been dictating. And Prabhupada said, that is not what I mean. I'm saying Krishna himself personally has dictated these books. You know, he's standing behind me speaking these translations. He's speaking the Bhagavatam. He's speaking the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He's speaking these books. So Srila Prabhupada is personally seeing Krishna. He's seeing Krishna everywhere. What's this verse? Yomam pasyati sarvatra sarvam cha mai pasyati tasyaham na pranasyami sa cha me na pranasyati. That one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I am not lost to him and he is not lost to me. So when we see Krishna, when we're looking, when we try to see him, here it's covered. Just like the deeper understanding of Prema Bhakti is covered in this verse, so in the material world, Krishna is covered over. We can't see him unless we actually try, unless we sincerely make the endeavor, unless we sometimes even force ourselves to remember Krishna, to reach out to the holy name, you know, when things are really tough. Instead of taking shelter of some other aspect of the material energy, something that is ultimately not going to give us freedom, but give us bondage. Instead of doing that, we reach out, we call out to Krishna by chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, Srila Prabhupada has made the process in one sense very simple for all of us. That all we have to do is surrender, chant Hare Krishna, and as Prabhupada said, and be happy. Right? Prabhupada explained that if there's a devotee who's unhappy, then he's not doing something right. Right? Then he's not actually performing Krishna consciousness in the proper way. So we have to understand that automatically with the realization of Krishna or personal God, then Ananda is there. No other process can give you bliss than Ananda. It can give you sat and chit, but it cannot give you Ananda. It cannot give you bliss. This process of Krishna consciousness is so blissful. Right? During the kirtan, everyone's dancing like small children in circles, swinging to and fro, smiling, wild abandon. Who's thinking about work? Who's thinking about difficulties? Right? If you engage in the kirtan movement, if you engage in the sankirtan mission, then you become happy. You become blissful. And so many other things pale in comparison. If you stand on the sidelines and watch, you can also be a little blissful. But to that extent that one surrenders, to that extent that one participates, then one gets the mercy. So my understanding is Sankirtan mission is not a spectator's sport. It's not that you get a ticket and you come and watch. The proof of the pudding is in the eating. So you have to pick up a spoon or a fork or use your fingers, whatever. But you got to get stuck in. You have to actively participate. You have to give yourself to the process. And then there's bliss. Then immediately there's satisfaction. There's joy. And then, guess what will come after that? Surrender. Challenge. Test. Difficulty. Obstacles. And then we'll think, oh, maybe it doesn't work after all. Maybe that was just something for a little while. And now that's it. I've cashed in my chips. I better get out while I still got time. Right? But the point is you come against an obstacle because Maya is there. She's like, okay, you've had a little bit. Are you really serious? You really want to go all the way? You really want to be with Krishna? You really want to give your life to Krishna? Well, how about this? And then she sees how you deal with it. So if we view obstacles or impediments on the path of devotional service as opportunities, If we can actually begin to develop the consciousness with which we see every impediment as sent directly by the Lord in order to help me, in order to assist me. You know, sometimes we get into these situations where we think, I didn't do anything to deserve this. You know, I'm not wrong in this situation. I'm right. And that's the biggest illusion of Maya. When we think that we're right. Because as soon as you think you're right, it's like you grab hold of it and you're ready to defend it. Right? I'm right and you are wrong. And if I win, then you lose. Who likes to be a loser? Who likes to be a winner? Be honest. Come on. Right? So everyone wants to win, and then you fight. And then the struggle, then the turmoil. And where is Krishna? Lost. Completely. It becomes a battle of egos. But when one person, it only takes one. And like difficulty, right? When you have these conflicts, maybe I'm the only person who's ever had conflicts with others, but you know, when you have conflicts of interest, right, it takes two to tango. It takes two. As soon as one becomes submissive and accepts a humble position, then the battle's over. You know, right? Martial arts. Anyone, you do martial arts? Anyone does martial arts? Used to. You know, the whole key to martial art is that you don't attack, right? You just use the opposing person's energy against them. So if there's like a battle and you surrender, then it's, then what can, if you get on the floor, if there's an argument and you get on the floor and offer your respects and obeisances, what happened to the argument? It's out the window. But if you stand there going, no, 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 I'm right, you're wrong, I'm right, you're wrong. You ever seen two little kids fight over a toy? It's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, it's mine, no, no, right? It's the same. I mean, it's nice, it's the childish mentality we should have, we should become like children, but not in that way. Our hearts have to become pure and innocent like children, but not exactly like that. We have to be willing to accept full responsibility. Right? Sometimes I hear devotees say, well, it's 50% my fault. That means you've 50% surrendered. It's not 50%. You have to take 100% responsibility for the part that you've played in causing this. Even if you don't have any idea how you did it. Simply because you have, you know, you looked funny the wrong way. Somehow or other, you did something and you just accept responsibility for that. 100% responsibility that somehow or other I did something to help cause this. And then we surrender. So these obstacles will come, specifically the predominant obstacle that comes in our devotional life generally is differences of opinion, conflict with devotees, so many other things, because it's explained the worst offense or the most difficult offense or defense to avoid is Vaishnava Aparad. In the age of Kali, quarrel predominates. The tendency to conflict is the thing that's happening everywhere. That's what it's all about. People become expert in conflict, so they always win. Right? They always get one up. But we should become expert in the art of humility. Srila Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavad Gita the definition of tolerance. And I repeat this all the time for my own purification. Because as soon as I read it, I realized, what a powerful statement. Anyone knows that in the, was it the 12th chapter? The 12th chapter? Yeah. 8 through 12. He gives the, lists the characteristics of knowledge. And Krishna says, apart from these, everything else is ignorance. And he lists tolerance. And Srila Prabhupada unpacks and explains that in the purport. And he says, tolerance means to be practiced to bear insult. practiced to bear insult. And then he goes on to explain that anyone who takes seriously to the spiritual process will have many opportunities to practice tolerance. So this is what we have to be prepared for. But if you pass the test, the bliss just keeps rolling. It doesn't stop. But if you get hung up, then Krishna's just waiting for you to surrender. He's waiting for you to become humble. He's waiting for you to become purified. He sent this obstacle to help. And if we fight his hand, he still keeps trying, but we suffer. So the sooner we learn to be humble and tolerant, offer respect, expect no respect, right? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says this first, Shanadapi Suniche Nato Api Suhishana Mani Namani Dena Kirtaniya Sadahari, should be strung on a thread of the holy name and worn around our neck at all times. This should be the verse that we always meditate on, trying to remember this is what I'm supposed to be. So I'll stop here. Thank you very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Does anyone have any comments, questions, corrections?